from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guests, the experientialists, Lou Pesante and Maria Redden.
Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Morley. I am Mark Leger, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am very excited about tonight's show, and in speaking with our guests, I had a memory that I hadn't had in a long time about actually an experience where I was not present, but it made an impression on me, left an impression on me when I heard about this experience. I have some friends that throw some lovely, lovely, lovely parties. They are loving people and very caring. And I heard about a couple of the parties. This happened more than once, but where this couple goes all out. They invite people into their beautiful home and they do beautiful, beautiful decorations and flowers and place settings on the sit-down table and gifts, like in intentional and memorable and thoughtful gifts that they either place in front of each setting with the name and all that, or they gift them afterwards towards the end of the party. And usually their parties go on for a long time, and there's usually a theme, like there's music, and it's a lovely, lovely experience. And almost always there is a game of some kind. So I bring this up because it came to my memory that on more than one occasion, everything was amazing. The food was very thought out. Not only was it top of the line, it was also, they paid attention to who had food allergies and who had specific dietary requirements and all of that. When it came to the game, the play part, something went badly wrong. And I was told this by actually one of the couple, one of my friends, who said it was the party. This is how the conversation started. I knew the whole lead up, which is what I shared with you. And I said, how was the party? Horrible. Now, everything went wonderful for the first four or five, whatever hours, until they started the play part. And then I was told, as if it was happening right there, so-and-so refused to play the game the way it was supposed to be played. And so-and-so didn't follow the rules, or so-and-so cheated and it ruined it for everybody, which I started to doubt that it ruined it for everybody. I started to get the impression that it ruined it for my dear, dear friend. And finally, I said to him, what was the intention of the whole party? I love these people and I have fun with them and I wanted them to have fun and we were celebrating. And I said, what was the intention of the game? Well, it's a nice way to end the evening and everybody's having fun. I said, well, were they having fun? And he said, well, until so-and-so started to do it. And some people laughed and some people said, oh, just let her or it's okay. But no, you know, and I said, well, maybe that was the new game that was being created. Maybe that was the moment. Maybe that was the experience. No, well, then we just should scrap the game and just do nothing or do whatever. And I said, but maybe the game is a catalyst for fun in certain ways. No, you don't get it, Filippo. And I have a feeling that, well, first of all, I have to say, I have been all of those people in that room. I have been the one who's a stickler to the rules. I've been the one who didn't know how to play and slowed everybody up. I've been the one who wanted to play the game differently. And I also have been the one that didn't get that the moment sometimes is the moment, and that the moment can actually be greater than the moment that was anticipated by the rules that were set down. And I couldn't help but, thanks to our guests, make a connection to life and how, yes, it's important in play, and maybe we don't even know how to play in the true sense of the word. We might talk about that tonight. But also in life, life changes. And we can't say, but this is the rule, or this is how it was yesterday, or this is how it's supposed to be, or we can say that. But it might ruin all this beautiful experience that was set up that maybe could have ended with, oh, it was wonderful. Instead, that particular party or a couple of those ended in hurt feelings and in some cases ruined friendships. And that can be life too. And I'm ready to do it differently.
Maybe the game would have been better than it ever has been.
Exactly. Like when we were kids, we'd invented.
Exactly. And that's what I was thinking about. I was thinking about experience and when does it start? And I went right back to childhood and before that I could even remember. And you think about how experience and experiential is feeling your mother or father's skin for the first time, hearing their voice, taking the first stumbles, taking the first crawls, taking the first steps, smelling the outside air or the ocean breeze, or right? That's all experiential. And then we get disconnected from that wonder and awe, and we start to, it reminded me of our work with What If 360 mm-hmm. years ago, because it was around third or fourth grade that the creative capacity largely shut off as the kids grew older up to adults that were like, well, how do I be creative? Do I need to put it in boxes? Do I put it in columns? Right.
So we're like our life improvement workshop.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. And recalibration for that matter.
Well, that's what this all is. And that's what tonight's going to be is a recalibration, but I couldn't be more excited and honored to have our guests, Lou and Maria on. They have impacted in not only an industry, but a worldwide culture and the way that it's evolving and expanding and how it affects communities and thoughts and behaviors and most importantly spreads joy and fun. And that's kind of what they're all about. It's an exciting conversation.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because they both come from corporate. They, I mean, in the case of Lou, like literally law, legalese, and in the case of Maria, like actually corporate.
I'm sure they had a lot of fun in their corporate roles, but I bet when you ask them that that they are having more fun these days.
Oh, I could tell right from the word go. We have titled this episode, by the way, this is our episode 888. The episode title is Life is the Experience Within the Experience. Try that on for size. We are featuring interview guests, co-conspirators at the Experientialists, an immersive, experiential, and location-based entertainment enterprise, Lou Pizzante and Maria Redden, and performance guest, music, culture, unity, love, that's what she's about, singer, songwriter, vocalist, musician, Morley, coming up a little later on the show. But first, Lou Pizzante and Maria Redden, welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Hi.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, it's quite the pleasure. And you see what our short conversation inspired. Like, I want to fix, right the wrongs, or learn the play, how to play, like get the play right.
Well, as soon as you said it was a really wonderful story to start off with. But as soon as you said it, Maria looked at me and she says, "What's the difference between a game and play?"
Yeah, what you felt right there that day was the difference between play, which is open ended, and you change the rules in the moment, and the game, which has very clear rules and expectations and outcomes and winners and losers, right? And so, sort of the minute that you said it, like somebody else was not playing the game; they were just playing, right? And so, I think that mismatch. You know, it just depends on what you want to plan for that night, right?
Right.
So.
Wow. And then, and like Mark was saying, like, where does the experience actually start, you know, and where does it end? And then you all, let's get into it, because you all, like, okay, let me ask you this, because I know, Maria, you were, a lot of your corporate work was at Mattel. So yes. One would think that some of that was fun.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. That's why I went there. Okay. Even in the direst of meetings, you sort of had to remind yourself that you're making some things, you know, that some kid was going to hold and was going to have a really fantastic time with. So that's kind of what kept everything going. And it was also a place of tremendous creativity. Like the, just to give you a sense, Mattel at that time had about 2,000 toys that were developed. Wow. That went out to all the retailers. Out of those 2,000 toys, about 1,600 of those would never come back for the next year. So they had to redo, you know, almost, is that? 80% of their 80% of their toy line needed to be redesigned for the next year, which, you know, it's like fashion, right? Except these are actual toys. So the amount of concepts, the amount of creativity, the amount of
waste.
Yes. Yeah. And actually sort of one of the reasons why sort of I really love what we're doing now, namely experiences. You know, the amount of creativity that was placed in order to create these magical moments for children was really incredible. And not children, and now adults too, so.
And now adults too, which is very interesting. And I didn't really focus in on that until you brought that to my attention. It's like, oh, wait, that's interesting and important. And before we go on with that, Lou, you were about as corporate or legal as you could get, right?
Yeah, I was a corporate, I'm a lawyer. I was, I never truly practiced. I was an investment banker. And then I was very heavily involved in real estate. But that background, particularly in finance and real estate, allowed me to kind of see the world more spatially. And a lot of what we do, obviously, because it's rooted in the physical world, requires a deep understanding of real estate. And both of us really appreciate architecture and the ability to create worlds inside spaces. So it either there was a definite through line, or I'm just kind of revising my timeline, my trajectory to make it so.
Well, good for you. And actually, I was thinking, how do you all come from those kinds of backgrounds into saying we want to create spaces and experiences, and not just spaces and experiences, but use what you all know to make them work?
I mean, I think both of us separately, we're always very interested in live entertainment. You know, while I was in corporate America, Goldman Sachs, etc., I also had a side hustle with some of my university friends where we had a bunch of nightclubs and restaurants. Oh. And did music festivals. And I mean, Maria, at MIT, you were...
Yeah, I was at the MIT Media Lab, where sort of we did a lot of, you know, we blended art and technology, and, you know, we had Opera of the Future. In any case, it's just a lot of that art. How is it that technology can embody art in everyday?
And you were passionate about theater.
And oh, yeah. And well, I've always worked in the theater.
Right. And so eventually we were very lucky enough that we were successful in our career, where we could get a little bit more autonomy and independence and the types of things we wanted to do. And when we first met and started working together, it was at a firm called Good that did social impact and worked with large NGOs and Fortune 50s architecting their social impact strategy. Maria led that, and I was the lawyer finance person. And a lot of the activations we did were real world activations and real world. We were looking, I mean, Maria can explain better than me.
Yeah, what we were looking to do is, large corporations tend to have their departments that try to do good, right? Like corporate social responsibility. And it tends to mostly be, giving donations to groups that align with, you know, whatever the company is about. Our philosophy was a little bit broader, sort of the idea that yes, giving money is awesome, but there's so much more that a company can do, right? Because a company not only has, may have that money to give away, but they also have internal resources like,
yes,
understanding of what operations may look like, or like logistics of transportation, exactly, supply chains that they could use, right? Like we were really inspired by, I think it was Coca-Cola that, has a really incredible supply chain, especially in Africa. And at some point, they partnered and they were able to carry, in addition to Coca-Cola, they were able to carry to medicine throughout some of these areas that usually don't have access. So things like, Pepsi, and Pepsi ended up doing some really interesting work also in Africa, where they were decided to put in a plant, but they ended up because they were taking water from the location, they ended up working with the farmers to better understand sort of how the water their water usage. And at the end of the day, that plant, that area had more water available to them afterwards than they did before. Just again, sort of it was that kind of work where you're working with the community, with your resources, and it's not just about money that we were after. It was really fun.
I'm get
Go ahead.
please, please.
No, I was going to say, and ultimately, from there, we went to a company called Two Bit Circus in Los Angeles, which was an engineering studio, super creative, and we were part of the executive team there. And that's where we really started diving deep into experiences and immersive entertainment, I guess is now what it's called, probably a little bit too loosely. From there, it just we just really fell in love with that. We fell in love with the idea of creating worlds, allowing people to play. We think that there's a big social impact and a big purpose component of that. It's artistic, it's beautiful, it brings smiles.
And at the same time, kind of going back to that social impact and what Lou was saying earlier, right? Like you're when you create a memory, like when you create an experience with other people, you're also not making a thing, right? Like you're not throwing away a toy that you made and now you no longer need. So.
But what you're making is you're helping to make a person, because we are all just like the string, the amalgamation of all of our memories. So when we're in experientialism, when we're doing experiences, we're creating moments, and we're trying to create moments that resonate and ultimately become memories. And we are the sum total of our memories. And so you really do help shape people. And when you're shaping an individual and you shape many individuals, you can start shaping the world.
I'm getting a sense that only the two of you and the two of you together could have done this. Like, you were meant to do this. Like, how perfect everything you're sharing, and I know we don't know the hundredth of it, but everything you're sharing leads up to, but of course. The experience of life has shaped you into experientialists.
It certainly looks sounds a lot easier in hindsight.
I
We are
can't
very
imagine. I
we're
can't
very
imagine.
fortunate. Yep.
We're very fortunate to be able to do this.
And that the way you experience life in the moment, like when we first connected, something that you all said, I won't share, but I mean, it's just like the elements that you've shared saying, oh, we're here, we're doing this. And it's like, wow, like they are living, from what I could tell, they are living what they talk about. You're in the life that is an experience.
We're very fortunate in that there's a lot of incredibly creative people in this field. It's a large, almost undefined field. It spans from theme parks to small, intimate, immersive theater productions, and they take us in and they show us their worlds. And I mean, we've been gee, we've been walking around Cirque du Soleil and trying to talk and listen to what people are telling us while there's acrobats going on training in the background. And you just kind of pinch yourself to be like, I can't believe we're like here. And we get to see things again from a back of house, and I mean that metaphorically as well as literally, and see how lots of different types of experiences run, what makes them tick, which is what's most interesting to us. Because at the end of the day, what we do is we build these experiential businesses, and so we're just very fortunate to be able to like our work is to go experience fun.
Well, and very important work actually, and growing. So when it may sound novel to some people and say, oh, that's nice, or nice for them, or Cirque du Soleil is great, but how big is the potential for the industry that you all are talking about, and why is it important?
Well, it depends again how you define it, because experiences from a like the experience economy, which was coined by our friend Joe Pyne, is really anything out of home. He defines it as any kind of staged experience that's out of home. We define experientialism as maybe a subset or a type of experience that has a quality. I mean, we're looking at things that create state changes in people. Everyone has, we're always in some state. It's what you feel, it's how you perceive the world, it's how you're thinking. And so we look for experiences that are taking you through something or presenting you with something that is designed to create a state change. And we're also looking at these types of experiences deliver the state change by your participation. And when we say participation, we don't mean that you get to determine the outcome or you're pressing a button or something like that. But we mean that the experience actually exists because of the way you experience it. If you can ignore the experience and it still happens, then it's not experiential. It's a different kind of experience. And I think one of the ways, as an example, because that's a little abstract, we can talk about that, is one of the companies that we're very closely involved with is the Balloon Museum. And Maria, you can talk about like what participation means in that kind of those artworks.
Right. So the Balloon Museum is an experience, a traveling art exhibit that has been in the U.S. since 2023. And they take over about, 60,000 square feet, locations that are giant. And Lux, the parent company, what they've done is they've curated these sets of art, these sets of artworks. And each one of them requires your participation. So the artwork is really not complete until you're there playing with it.
One of their slogans is, please do not touch the art.
Exactly. So, and it truly is because we work with them, we go there when it's empty, when it's full of people, before they open, after they open. And it is such a different and much more interesting place when you see, especially kids, right? Like, because they have no inhibitions, like absolutely throwing themselves at the balls, pushing, pulling, like it just really interacting with each one of those pieces, that like the artwork just feels like fundamentally different.
Now, these are artworks by very like highly regarded artists that are in MoMA, that are in Tate. We just commissioned one that we're going to be opening New York with from Marina Abramovic. And so when there's nobody in the room, these are artworks, these are art pieces, but they only become experiential art pieces when they're being
played with. Exactly. And it's so different, right? Like, cause you come at it from a different perspective. For example, there's this one piece where there's these polygons that are inflatable, giant inflatable polygons that you can create structures with, because these things are like maybe 4 feet tall, and so you can stack them on top of each other, and so you can do that, and it's a lot of fun. But to watch somebody else do that, to watch them sort of try to balance things, to interact with it, right? Like
to watch septuagenarians do it.
Exactly. To watch
little kids,
to watch people who are older. We were in Paris. Like, I have never seen so many happy Parisians. Like, it was really incredible.
Brilliant. Brilliant. This is like the way you're describing certain aspects of this is very specific, and I believe very important. And I can't help but make the correlation to life and how when we're not experiencing others, how we are, and when we are experiencing others, how we are, that plays into everything you're saying, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Experiences allow you to start to play again. I'm going to use that word play, but what we're really talking about is to try on different roles, to test boundaries, to kind of play test a different person that you might be, even if you never really want to be it, to just be it for a little bit. Which really goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is what you are and what you opened the show with who we were when we were children, before we were told that we had to grow up and stop playing. Mm-hmm. I mean, Maria brings up a really interesting point, going back to Mattel, about the Barbie girls who start aging out.
Oh, right. So when I worked at Mattel, sort of I worked in the girls' toy division, which sort of had Barbie in it. And it was really fascinating to watch girls play with Barbie. So Barbie is literally their best friend when they're young, and then there's a moment when they turn around 10 or 11, and sort of that number keeps on going down, where they still love Barbies, but they become closet Barbie players. They literally will have like they'll keep the stuff in their closets, and it only comes out when they're alone, or only maybe their best friend, who they've also confessed to that they still like to play Barbies. Only then will they play it. But the important part for Mattel was that they no longer want to receive Barbies as gifts, right? But so there's that, like you can see at that moment, right? Like how society is shaping you into growing up, into like making that distinction of like, no, these toys are not for me anymore.
But what really helps us to grow up and what really shapes us is that ability to push the boundaries and to test the social norms and to play with a box and pretend that you're a fighter pilot or that it's a home and you're a kitten, whatever it might be. And so what we really hope that we can do through experientialism is to allow people to continue to explore and to continue to start playing again. And we really mean play in that like unstructured, no boundaries, be what you want to be. Like, and we think that is important for inner growth. We think that's important for empathy too, because when you play different roles, maybe it starts helping you stand in somebody else's shoes as well. And when you do that, and this is the final kind of component for us, where we really like when we really think it can be powerful, is because we're talking about things that happen out of home, then you start having the opportunity for a shared presence with somebody, where you can start being in a room with strangers and you can feel this together. And in a you know we've talked about this a lot, like in a world where we're becoming increasingly isolated and loneliness is endemic. Right, the ability to have a shared presence with strangers is so important. Like we haven't evolved that much that that's not important, right?
It's the same thing, sort of that's also very similar in terms of being divisive, right? Like when you're in the presence of somebody else, it's a lot more difficult to not like see them as a human, not see them as a person. So again, right, like this idea of a shared reality, even if it's a fantasy reality or if it's just something that you've never seen before, I've never really kind of understood, it gives you a different perspective. It allows you to push who you may be or sort of how you think about things. And that's the part that we really enjoy.
But it's difficult to get that. And to the point that you were making earlier with your friends, one of the things that's really important is that you're able that people arrive at that experience positioned and understanding how to enter it, how to inhabit it. And part of that is interpretability, how you communicate it to them. And the other part of it is the trust that you garner when they're coming in there, because we call this imaginative consent. For somebody to really come in and inhabit that world and share that experience, there's a consent that needs to happen, right? They have to, right? There's an imaginative consent where they have to lower their barriers, and that's a huge obligation of you then to deliver that experience, to take that trust responsibly, right, and carefully and attentively, and to make sure that you're helping guide them to that experience while still giving them the agency to explore it the way they want to.
Wow. So as you know, so Lou, you th that was the question I was going to ask. I was going to ask you, well, because I perused your book, X-Stack, right? Actually, what's the full
Cracking
title?
the X-Stack.
Cracking the X-Stack. And in there, the designing part of this was so brilliant. Like that's part of it. There's more to it. Talk about design for us, please. In
Well,
the
I mean,
experiential world.
yeah. So, I mean, we think of these, so we're approaching this from a business standpoint, right? There's a lot of literature about human-centered design, experience design, and it's critical. But you have to we look at it more as the microeconomics of the business, because every creative decision is actually an operations decision. Every real estate decision is a finance decision and creative decision. They're all blended together. And so we look at it similar to a tech stack. We have what we call an X stack, which is the capital layer, the real estate layer, the operations layer, the creative layer, the marketing layer. And they all have to be integrated. They're really, in a sense, it's a stack, but really it's almost like a prism where there's light being refracted in all the different ways.
Yeah, sort of. I think one of the things that you know, from all the things that we've done, right? We see what are the things that are, it's almost like a checkbox, right? Not a checkbox, but it's like a list that makes you understand sort of where your strengths and where your weaknesses may be as you're kind of creating these experiences, right? Because even though not all experiences need to make money, right? Like some of them can absolutely can be art pieces. There are a number of them that would like to be.
And even if they don't make money, they still have to worry about the practical, boring stuff like life safety,
Yeah.
right?
Right,
Like guest
right.
flow, like making sure you don't have staff burnout because there's like so there's all these sorts of things that you need to that you need to design and think about that aren't always apparent to the audience or the participant. But the magic doesn't just happen in the moment. The magic actually takes a lot of work that it's on,
Right.
right?
It's all that all the stuff that happens backstage and in the home office, right? Like so our book is sort of brings all those pieces together so that you're not blindsided by because you didn't know that this needed to happen.
And it comes from really just our experiences, you know, as investors, as advisors, as operators, and just the so many experiences that we've seen, not just going through, but we've actually like seen the spreadsheets, we've seen the staffing plans, because people come to us and they want to share it with us. They want to share it to us to support us. They want to share it with us because they want us to help them. And so we've really been in a privileged place and a special place where we've seen such a high volume of this. And part of what we wanted to do was open source it.
Right. Yes.
Open source it, not in the way that we're disclosing
Wow.
confidential information, but we're seeing the patterns, the structures,
There you go.
so because it's not written anywhere.
Best practices, if
Best
you will,
practices.
right? Like I think people should we will all make mistakes, right? Like we should just not make the same mistakes that we
Yeah.
could have from before, right? Like make a new one. That's awesome. And then we'll know not to go down that path, right?
There are plenty of mistakes to be had, right? There's never a
Exactly. Oh,
shortage,
right.
so why make the same ones? So in a
Exactly.
sense, we're teasing the book, Cracking the X Stack. It's not out yet, but when people hear this sometime from now, it will be out. So people could go to your website and, of course, learn more about it, and that would be at experientialists. Do you say dot us?
Dot us, because
Dot
we're all
us. Okay. Okay.
experientialists,
Experientialists dot us. So we have other links for both Lou and Maria on our website at the Life Changes Show. But so I have I like this is all this not all of it, but some of it is very new to me, and I get so many different ideas around it. Like on the one hand, I even mentioned to you all when we spoke earlier that I feel like you're the adult in the room, and not the adult saying, no, you can't do that, no, you shouldn't do that, but the adult that says, okay, you want to play like this or you want to play that way? All right, then let's find the space, or let's make the space safe. And
Yeah, I
also,
hope so. I hope, yeah.
you're
But I
also the
have. Go ahead.
economist. Go on, sorry. I'm
No,
excited
I
too.
sort of thought when you said that when you said that before, I thought it was such a wonderful and thoughtful comment because I think for us, one of the things that we're careful not careful about, one of the things that we love to do is work with the creative teams, work with the teams that are actually doing this, and you know, to create like we want to create a business around them that's sustainable, but at the same time that doesn't kill like the magic, right? Because it's
Yes.
so easy to be like, all right, right, like now you need a budget, right? Like and you can absolutely put a
Womp,
budget down, but like
womp,
if the exactly right,
womp.
like
We want to empower them with it.
exactly right, like but the budget is just like no, right? Like what is really important here, right? Like let's build a budget that matches that,
Or an operating plan or a
or
guest flow
there.
like that. So we can do what you want to do.
Exactly. So it is the adult in the room, but it's not the mean adult. It's the like, how do we do this? Like, we
Right.
know how to do this. How do we get there?
Nice.
Yeah.
So the other image I got is like I think maybe I don't have words. Maybe there are no words. Like, you're all on the precipice of like next level for sure. But like the environmentalist, in the sense that earlier, I think you were talking about a space that was no longer being used in such a way, but as it was, and that could be used in this way. Like, it has to work with what's around it too. Like, when people go there, they're going to want to feel like that's the place where they could do that. It's not just in a mall where other people are that are shopping or walking by looking in and saying, what are those weird people doing, right? Yeah. So it has to work with the environment.
It does. I mean, to some extent, it depends on, again, what the experience is and how it needs to be inhabited.
Do you want to talk about Ministry of Awe?
Oh, Ministry of Awe just opened in Philadelphia, and it is just a collection of artists curated by, you know, one individual artist, but it's an old bank building that had been vacant for many decades.
1985.
Old vaults, and now what it banks is the currency of memories and moments. And so, you know, what we always say is there's certain experiences, and this is not a bad or good, but there's some experiences where they can be in a mall, they can be, you know, like an escape room or something where
that is alive.
Right. Well, what we say that those are things where you intercept the traffic that's coming by, the foot traffic that's coming by. And then there's other things that are almost an invite. Like, part of going there is the experience, like the Ministry of Awe, like the Ice Hotel. It's like the original Meow Wolf in Santa. These are places where you're going there. You're not going for any other reason.
Yeah.
There is in Marfa in the desert, isn't in Texas, where they just built a Prada in the middle of nowhere. Then an artist, it's not a real Prada, but an artist built a Prada store in the middle, and that is a comment in and of itself. And it's become a pilgrimage to go there and see it. So there's no, I don't think, you know, we always say that the and this is in the book too, but like they always say that the real estate is all about three words: location, location, location. And that's kind of right, but really it's, what's the question? What are you trying to build? Who are you trying to attract? What is the experience you're trying to do? Mm-hmm. There's immersive theater experiences where you don't even know where it's going to be, and they release the location, and going there is half the experience. Mm-hmm. So the real estate does matter, the venue does matter, how you arrive matters, what state you're in, and then how you cross that threshold.
Yeah.
You all have so much wisdom to share. And as I was talking with you all earlier, I was thinking about something that I've thought about for a while, is so many people that either retire young because they can, or even if they're older and they retire, but they have so much knowledge. And there's so many younger people, or people even of whatever age, that are wanting to start new and exciting things, but they don't have the knowledge. So you're bridging this gap between the book and how you all seem to work, in the sense that, okay, let's take the idea, and then these business structures that work are actually going to help you, as opposed to looking at them as blockages. Like, oh, like it could be kind of scary. So like, I'm such a fan. Just so mentorship, right? In this new space, like, the space hasn't been around for really that long, although. Mm-hmm. Lou, did you say it's actually been around for a while?
Well, I mean, there's you know, historically, how far do you want to go? What is its origins? Is its origins in circuses and gardens, experiential gardens?
Oh,
but
I think
if you look at bits of it, like the first immersive theater was in the 70s, and
I mean Disneyland, right?
Like, and there's Disneyland.
Oh, true.
'50s
experience.
Well, that's an example, right? So when you talk about experiential. Six Flags is an amusement park. Disneyland is a theme park,
yes.
Right? Again, state change, being in the world, like those are the types of differences that we're talking about. They're just a little bit like, they're taking you into their world. They're not just giving you a bunch of things to do. Mm-hmm. And so different colors of that, different flavors of that have been around for some time, but it really is growing. The consumer is growing, there's more demand for it, is getting more discerning, and there's incredible creators out there.
Yeah. I think there's I think maybe what you're pointing to is that this type of art, or this type of experience, has, like Lou said, right? Like it's it's come out so much more so quickly over the last few years. And I think that just that comes from the fact that the technology is getting cheaper, right? Like, so whereas before, to make something magical happen at Disneyland, right, like it required computers and lights and things of that sort, right? Like, now you can make that same magic happen just in a store or in your house because technology has gotten so cheap. You can 3D print whatever, right? Like, it's so that accessibility to make those magical worlds is has happened, like has become more accessible. So because of that, right, like now there's more people who are able to create that and not have to wait for the billion-dollar budgets that were required before.
And then you just have the general shift towards experiences over products over
Stuff
stuff,
over things.
and I think that hopefully we're evolving a little bit more from social media, take a picture and see that I was here, to I'm gonna actually be here, I'm gonna be here.
I hate bringing this conversation to a close because I'm loving this conversation, and you all have so much wisdom, and it's exciting to hear how you share it, and I know that you feel it. I do want to just briefly, for just a minute, touch on a subject, and we've touched on it all along, but this shared experience in the book, I read the phrase shared presence, and I thought, wow, presence, like you're actually present. It's not someone sitting in front of you with a phone or whatever, and they're on a whole different in a whole different world. But you also said it's increasingly rare, which makes what you're doing that much more important. Can we just talk about that for a moment and the hope behind this?
Yeah, well, I mean, it comes to what we opened up with, right? That we're social creatures, right? And we want to have a sense of community. We want to have a sense of belonging. And to be able to create those moments, like they're priceless moments. And again, we say that we're moment merchants, right? Like we're in the business of manufacturing moments, but we want those moments to ripen into memories. That's what makes them special. We were in London, and I would encourage anybody in London, whether you like this band or not, to go there. Maria loves them. It's ABBA, and Mark knows all about this. And the ABBA Voyage Experience, which is the hologram concert. And what's amazing about it for me is, ABBA, when was the last time they were on stage? I mean, this is like people from like the 80s, like people have memories of this. And so you get into the stadium of, was it like 7,000 people or something? So,
No,
you know,
2,500.
2,500. And they're all strangers. And then suddenly they're all part of this community. There's this huge sense of communitas because they're sitting there, not because they like ABBA music, not because they're about to see this show, but because they're gonna all giving that imaginative consent to be in this make-believe concert that they never thought in their lives they'd ever be able to see again.
Exactly.
And that's beautiful.
Yes. S. Devlin is a really famous set designer, and she calls it a temporary society, right? She
Ooh.
because she does these she creates these beautiful backdrops for U2 and artists of that caliber, and right, like so there's these temporary societies that form for that moment, for those hours that sort of come together and feel the feel the things that the
Us,
Yeah, exactly. That sort of that moment. And so, music is one way, right? Like it, and I think part of what we're trying to do is, push that even further, where you're feeling that community, but we're all, but you also have a little bit of, you have more agency. So.
I feel like we've teased so many different subjects here, and thank you for that, because I'm sure all of our brains are going firing in so many ways. And we've definitely teased the book, which I can't wait to dig into more, and that's Cracking the X Stack, and that will be out soon, or it might be already
Yeah,
out
that'll be
by
out like later
later.
this year. Yes.
So it might be already out when people are listening to the show, but
Okay.
experientialists.us, and then we have links for Maria and Lou, and potentially more links as more happens. Go to the Life Changes show for that. Look up both Lou Pizzante and Maria Redden. Lou and Maria, what an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank
We've
you
really
too.
enjoyed ourselves.
This is exciting. And I know you don't do a lot of this. You don't need to. You said we have nothing to sell. And I thought, yes, please sell us on play. Sell us on moments. Sell us on being able to create this or go out and experience it. Anyway, thank you both so much. Until next time, hopefully soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. Ciao, ciao. Oh, Mark.
Sell us on play. That was brilliant, and I had the good fortune of experiencing ABBA with them. And you know, the biggest takeaway, not just as Maria was mentioning, as tech has become more accessible and is starting to commoditize, the what was delivered and what so many of these experiences that they were highlighting deliver is reconnection to community and joy. Mm-hmm. The room full of joy was so palpable, and those are the things I think to aim for, and that's what I love about what they look for and what they highlight, because it's not just transactional.
I feel like these kinds of experiences are what we need more than anything else,
especially in today's world. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where things are going. I think that's probably a subtle contributor to why the entertainment of old is continuing to fail. People aren't engaged in passive, just give them, you know, what another retread of an old story type of distraction entertainment anymore. And even some of the, you know, get drunk and go home entertainment is falling away. People are wanting a more healthy, connected, heartwarming, safe feeling, you know, environment. Mm.
I find this very exciting, and I'm really glad we had this conversation. We're really glad we had Lou Pizzante and Maria Redden on the show. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Ethel, and once again, I need your help. I'm totally overwhelmed with taking care of my brother and his ex-wife, who are both mentally ill. I also take care of my ex-mother-in-law, who has recently fallen and injured herself. They all live with me, and now I am having accidents and just broke my ankle. I have prayed and prayed and prayed for help, and I feel God has failed me. What can I do to get well quickly and to live a joyful life?
Dearest Ethel, thank you for reaching out, and please know that my heart is with you. I can feel how much you have been carrying, and it is simply too much for one person, especially while you are injured. This is not a failure on your part, and it is not God failing you. Your body is asking you to stop giving so much and begin receiving help. You've been giving and giving for so long, and now it is your turn to be cared for. Right now, the most important thing is your healing. You cannot take care of everyone in this condition, and you don't need to. Please reach out for outside help, and whether it's family, community services, or medical support, you deserve that support. You can access mental health support by contacting local resources such as the Detroit Wayne Integrated Health Network, or Common Ground, which offers specialized services. Additionally, you can call the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline for immediate assistance and guidance on available mental health. And Ethel, please check with your health insurance provider, which can help identify covered mental health services in the area. By utilizing these resources, you can access the necessary support for yourself and your family members who are dealing with mental health issues. And please remember, dearest Ethel, you are not alone. I am here with you, and we will take this one step at a time. Let's focus on getting you safe, supported, and physically healed first. You have taken the most important step by getting informed and helpful medical attention for your ankle injury, and now it is time to get the help you deserve for your loved ones. Let's talk as soon as you get the appointment set up, and remember that you can reach out to me anytime you need loving support. And my dear friend, I lovingly suggest that you read some helpful healing books. I highly recommend Your Body Believes Every Word You Say by Barbara Levin and Metaphysical Anatomy by Yvette Rose. These books helped me heal myself, and I trust they will do the same for you and your loved ones.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, improve your experience and write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And for our performance segment, we have singer, songwriter, vocalist, musician, composer. She's all about music, culture, unity, and love. We welcome Morley to the Life Changes Show. Welcome, Morley. Greetings, Morley. You must be muted.
Hi there.
Hi there. Tell us what music, culture, unity, and love have to do with it.
Oh, it has to do with presence, like you were just talking about, with those beautiful, incredible people. That was an amazing conversation. But it is, music is about presence. It's about, it's everything. The earth carries music. Earth carries music force in her body and our body. We are of earth. And, you know, I'm a recording artist, a producer, and a touring musician. And I used to do about 11 years, I did hospice work with music. And I would sing to people during their transition. I would also sing in places where, you know, in post-conflict regions, and I sang for children, in hospitals and all kinds of places in the world. And my first visit to one of the children's hospitals, it was my first time doing this kind of work. And I took out an egg shaker. I started shaking, you know, making a rhythm, a percussive sound. And the child I was playing for was probably 2 years old and just started smiling. And the next child I played for, 6 months old, play the guitar. I just play one note on the guitar. They just start smiling as soon as they hear the vibration. And it wasn't that they had an actual reference point for the song or for the sound of the instrument. It's that it was the vibration of the instrument was tickling the cells of their body. Our cells are made of water. And it changes the music, changes the air in the room. It changed the frequency. Vibration changes the frequency of our emotional setting. And it's just to see the expression on these little children's, on their faces from the vibration. It changed my life. And that was many years ago. And my mother was a nurse, and I called her and I said, I just did this thing at this hospital for my first time. And I don't know if I'm going to keep going, but I wound up going for 11 years. It was with Musicians on Call. It's a great organization.
Wow.
And, it changed me for, like, when I perform, it doesn't matter where I am in the world. I no longer am really performing. I'm sharing sound vibration. And I happen to be the one singing and telling the story through the song and playing the instrument. But we're all sharing, like what was discussed just now in your conversation just now about presence. We're sharing presence. We're sharing the presence of sound vibration. And then we're not alone anymore. We're all inside the experience together in our, you know. So I just felt so connected to what you guys just talked about.
Oh, thank you.
I couldn't be here with you guys.
I couldn't agree more, and happy to have you. And I trust, and having felt this talking to you earlier, I feel the children were also feeling you.
Yeah, I mean, we are here, we are of each other, and I appreciate that. But I really tend to feel how we are none other than each other, and our empathy and care for each other is such a natural state. It's so natural, and so those experiences you're talking about, you know, those creative endeavors, it's bringing us back to our natural state, which is curious, play, wanting to play and discover. And to feel safe. And right now, with everything that's happening in our world, in our world culture, the need to feel safe, the need to feel of, you know, we are one ecosystem, where we are all of this ecosystem of life, with of water, of stars, of each other, of the disconnect is that's what's dying out. And I think, you know, the like you're just talking about, like they were talking about ways of like drinking. What is it? You were just talking about like bar, going to the bar, getting wasted and seeing a show. And, you know,
Right.
that's dying out, that style of entertainment. I think
Right.
because it's like we're coming back to our need to return to our natural state, which is to stay awake inside of the wonder and not to just, you know, annihilate ourselves with getting high and checking out and just getting, you know, stimulated by sound or performance, but actually being immersed in it and being reminded that we're of the experience because we're there. So whenever somebody is blown away by a musician or comes and, you know, gives me props or something for a show, I always commend them for being open enough to experience it.
You know, it's funny you say that because when I first started singing professionally, I would wonder why people were giving me props. I'd say, like, seriously, it was just me and the pianist here. Like, it's not like, I mean, like, stop. Like, we didn't put on like a big show. It's not La Vegas. We didn't have lights and dancers, and I didn't get it that they were feeling something. And I'm like, what? We didn't do a show. Like, I just sit here and sang. What's the big deal?
Yeah, you gave them sound vibration, you gave them your heart. You shared your heart. You shared your heart and you touched them. Like you say, you know, it was me that it's also me that they were responding to. But yeah, I
Right.
was open, you know, and I was open to being part of the, you know, I was open to being immersed in the sound with them. And so in a way, we get out of the way as artists for the sound, for the sound, or the, if you're an actor, for the character, for the spirit of that who needs to move through you to be that character. Like you get out of the way. It's most of our work. I mean, we tend to our craft and work on our instrument, whatever that is, you know, whatever that might be. But for me, it's my voice, and you know, guitar, whatever. But then the work is to get out of the way to hear the song and then to deliver it, you know.
Well, actually, that's a great lead into the song that we're going to hear. But before we do that, speaking of connections, we want to thank Dina Fanai, past performance guest on the show and friend of all of ours, mutual friend. Thank you, Dina, for introducing us to Morley.
Yes. Thank you, Dina. Beautiful Dina.
So you were talking about sound and connection and you know, safety and children. Where does Follow the Sound come from?
Oh, Follow the Sound is a title track of my album. Just came out last year and as well this year, physical copies in worldwide. So we have records, we have like vinyl and LP and CDs. And Follow the Sound was a song that was born from an action I attended, an artist action at the border of El Paso in Mexico, in front of the ICE headquarters there. And the song came to me while I was there. And it's a story of a dream a child is having after speaking to his mother in the dream. And this child has been separated from his mother and does not know where to go. And she said to him, you know, if you ever get lost, just try to listen for the sound of my voice and follow that sound. And so the song is directly addressing the worldwide refugee crisis of children and family separation, but it's also addressing the need, the sort of climate place we're at, where we have to follow the sound of Mother Earth and follow the sound of our own intuition and confidence that we can hear the sound. Hear the sound of Earth within us. We've gotten pretty far from that, these colonial practices, but we are also now, I feel, leaning back towards our inherent state, which is again that the state of listening, of curiosity, of play, and of gentleness. And that's where we can really hear the sound of our intuition and of Mother Earth. That's my feeling.
Well, and here it is. We're going to get to feel it as well. This is Morley's song, Follow the Sound, pre-recorded here on the Life Changes Show.
My lost in a crowd. Follow your voice and I will be found. I don't know what happened, don't know where I am, don't know where you are, so I begin to follow, follow the sound.
Thank you so much for sharing that music medicine with us and our audience.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here with you all.
It's very special to have you. Thank you. MorleyMusic.org is where you could find her. Morley is M-O-R-L-E-Y, MorleyMusic.org. But, of course, her music is available where music is sold and enjoyed. Spotify, Apple, Bandcamp, etc. We have links at the Life Changes Show page for Morley. Again, M-O-R-L-E-Y. We're going to get to hear one more song of Morley's, a very special one. But before we do, really quickly, Morley, I don't know what we can say. We talked about so much. I don't know what we can say. Can we say anything about your special project that you just finished? I think.
Follow the sound, and then I do have a children's album called Story of the Sky that I made with my husband and friends from around the world. It's incredible. I love it so much. And it's part of curriculum for social emotional learning.
Nice.
And it's under the name The Bruces, because my husband's Chris Bruce. And so, but it's Story of the Sky. And we're just finishing a new album, another album now that's going to come out in the fall. And it's very special, called The Gift of Awe. And it's lots of meditation, sort of meditative songs, and life, like affirmations, and sort of spiritual survival songs, very specifically around this time, just affirming the wonder. And the album's actually, it's called The Gift of Awe. So, yeah, and what you and I were discussing before was that I've just been thinking so much of why we gather to resist and, you know, and fight for justice. It's because we love. And when people are in despair, when myself included fall into despair around, you know, the magnitude of suffering in this time, it's because we love. It's because I love. That's why I hurt. And so when I can remember that I'm having grief because of all the wars and all the things that are happening, it's because I love. And because I know deep inside, we have an alternative to living this way. We have the intelligence. We have the love that's needed. I just feel like, you know, we need sort of maps. We need to uncover the maps that have been laid by so many people who have gone before us of how to proceed in this time. And use what we have and really lean in towards each other and through the differences, through the idea of the concept of race, the concept of cultural and religious divides. It's all concept. I mean, we take things away. We all want the same things, to feel safe, to feel loved, to be respected. And so I just keep coming back to love and in a very grounded love and sort of like what Krista Tippett describes as muscular hope. You know, it's got grit, because it takes you know, to be sober in a way to see what's possible. And then, you know, we're living in this wonder all the time. It's just it's a miracle that the body is existing, that the cells are responding and talking, everything's communicating within our own bodies. And then it's a miracle this planet has oxygen and water. And I mean, it's like we have everything. So I just keep coming back to that, and when I get overwhelmed, and that's what a lot of the music's about.
Well, actually, speaking of, the song that we're going to get to end this show with is very special, and it makes me beg the question: you say all this, and yet, who are we to believe that we have this power?
We are the ones.
We are the ones.
I mean, who are we? We are the ecosystem. We have systematically, you know, forgotten the language of Earth, but we are of Earth. So it's really, it's not doing anybody a solid to take care of somebody else. It's like taking care of ourselves to take care of someone else, taking care of ourselves to take care of the water. It's really more simple to me. And so we are the ones, and this is the time to bring in the new paradigm. And in the song we talk about, I say ancestors call, and that's the ancestors, also the ancestors, the trees, the human ancestors, the animal ancestors. They're calling on us to rise up in love. And it's nothing new what I'm talking about, but it really came to me very, very intensely, these feelings. And my husband and I got together and just put this song. It's just the two of us. He's doing all the instruments and we're singing all the voice, all the backing vocals. It's a definite offering of love. And
thank you for your offering respect, of love. Yeah.
Thank you for your offering of love.
You're very welcome. My pleasure. And we get to have the pleasure of hearing We Are the Ones, New Paradigm, here on the Life Changer Show. This is Morley and your husband, I guess, right? This is the two of your
Chris
songs.
Bruce. Yeah. Yes.
And so thank you to the both of you. This is pre-recorded here on the Life Changer Show.
Another empire's falling, a sacred fire keeps a steady glow. I feel my heart pounding in my chest and I know I'm not the only one alone. I hear that rhythm cross the planet speak in languages that only Mother Nature knows. Trust this love we found in each other won't be in vain. Our long time coming, worldwide rebellion is God's hand's wave of change.
She knows we are the water rising higher, dancing, marching feet to the fire.
We are the ones. This is the time.
Morley, we are the ones. Thank you for the reminder.
Thank you.
I remind everybody that Morley is Morley. I was so into the music, I didn't press unmute. I wanted it to keep going. Morley Music, M-O-R-L-E-Y. LEY.org and find her on the socials, find her on Spotify and Apple and Bandcamp. What was the line? It's too late to be just you or me.
Uh-huh. We're one under the sun or under the sky.
We're one under the sky.
Yeah, and we're one under the sky.
Sing it, Morley. Thank you so much. What a perfect song to end this amazing episode.
Thank you. Very amazing.
Such a pleasure having you on. Thank you for sharing your heart and your music and your medicine.
Thank you for all the good work you do.
Our pleasure, and so glad to get to do it with you. So with another big thank you to Morley, and another big thank you to Lou Pizzante and Maria Redden. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Legere, and our whole family here at the Life Changes Show, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely has tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.